about swim, ride, run, and anything else that tickles your fancy in the world of sport. This show is brought to you by Radio Sydney from Australian Broadcasting Media. What a ride with Aaron S. Lee and Rupert Guinness. Aaron S. Lee is not with us at the moment. He's over in the United States on assignment, but we're going to check in with him a bit later. I'm Rupert Guinness, and have the pleasure to have with me a special guest for this edition of What a Ride, Frank Conceso from Albion Cycles in sunny Bronte in beautiful Sydney. Frank, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you, Rupert, and welcome back yourself.
Yeah, thanks. It's been a few months, hasn't it, since we've seen each other?
Yeah, it has. I've been away, you've been away, and I think it's about 5 months so far.
Yeah, and it's all about bikes and triathlon and everything else that happens on the road. We can't talk about everything that happens on the road, though, can we?
No, we can't.
Well, we've got a cracker of a show coming up this in this edition, Frank, and thanks for coming on again. As I said, we're going to speak to Aaron S. Lee, who's over there in New Orleans, or Norlands, as he calls it. And we're going to check in to see what he's doing. And we're also going to have a chat to Matt White, who I know you know very well, the head sports director of Orica Green Edge. It's the second part of our two-part interview since the Tour de France. And he's going to be talking about the season ahead and what they're doing. And we're also going to speak to the man who's got his thumb on the pulse of Australian and international triathlon, Phil Rockner, from First Off the Bike. But as I said, Frank, welcome back, mate. Just briefly, you've been to Ireland, Portugal, Heffron Park, all the glamour spots of world cycling.
That's right. No, we went to Ireland with the team this year for the RAS, which is the International Tour of Ireland. And then I went on a holiday with my daughters to Portugal, which was absolutely fantastic.
This is why you look rested. You've got a nice suntan. You look well fed. Good family life.
Yeah, it's family's been good this year, and it's getting together and having a great time.
Yeah, we know on the show, one of the themes we're going to have is about bike shops. Well, you being a bike shop owner, this is a long-standing shop, Albion Cycles. Aaron Lee, you know, he's spoken to Michael Ferrand, who's the owner of Bicycle Michaels in the French Quarter of New Orleans. We've got an interview with him coming up later. It'll be interesting to see what you think, what he says about the bike industry and how does a shop, you know, fit into the lifestyle of the environment around. So, like, here we are now in Bronte, Frank. I mean, you know this area well. What's the sort of lifestyle here in this part of the eastern suburbs of Sydney?
Well, the lifestyle, look, it's Centennial Park. It's great. It's clearly the haven for cyclists, you know. We get a lot of people through the shop. People that just come in and say hello, you know. We get Spanish people, French people, all nationalities, and every day is different. And makes it really interesting in the environment that we are.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously you do coach a lot of athletes and triathletes. You've tried to get me around the Ironman course under 10 hours, which you haven't done yet, mate. You still owe me. You've got to get me under that 10-hour mark. But and also your race series over at Heffron Park, the Tuesday night Eastern Suburbs Criterium Series.
Oh, it's a great commitment to have, you know. Like, I get up every morning and I do something that I love, you know. I coach a lot of people in triathlon, in bike racing, and it's trying to get you under 10 hours would be a great achievement for me personally, and I think we can do that.
Okay, well, thanks, Matt. I've got a pencil in a race, and we'll knuckle down and do it.
Absolutely.
May mean less rosé this time, but we'll see. Anyway, well, speaking of rosé and fun times and laughter, I think we should put a call in to Aaron Lee over in New Orleans and see how he's doing, eh? What do you think?
Okay, sounds good.
Terrific.
Welcome back to What a Ride. My usual colleague, partner in crime in this show, Aaron S. Lee. He's not here in Sydney where we're recording, at Albion Cycles with Frank Conceso, our special guest. He's the owner of Albion Cycles. But as I said before, Aaron S. Lee is over in the United States of America in New Orleans, or should I say, New Orleans. Perhaps he could let us in and tell us, how do you pronounce it? Aaron, g'day, mate. How are you doing?
Hey, Rupert. Hey, Frank.
Hey.
Yeah, so tell us, how do you pronounce it? New Orleans, or you've got the drawl, you've got the good accent?
Absolutely. Well, actually, it's pronounced Nolan, so it's N apostrophe A-W-L-I-N-S. That's the correct way to do it, Nolans.
Oh, well, thanks for the education. Now, listen, it's the first time you've been back in the U.S. for 6 years, I understand, and I think you're going to the football game shortly after we speak to you, but tell us what's happening there, mate, in the world of multi-sport or any sport.
I'll tell you, you're right. Just as we're speaking, the New Orleans the local NFL franchise. They're underway for their first preseason game of the year. But the preseason games don't mean a whole lot. It's where they get to try out a lot of the new talent before they make their roster cuts. NFL teams around this time have about 90 players on the roster, and they have to trim that down to, I'm going to get this wrong, about 50 or so, 54, 55 players.
Gee, can you imagine if they did that in cycling? You know, you'd have squads of Sky pairing down their squad from 80 to 30 or whatever, you know?
No, exactly. But see, there's been a lot of great cycling going on at the moment. There's been a couple of interesting developments. You and I talked about it last week. We touched base on the whole Tom Danielson situation with Cannondale Gone.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, that's made headlines over there in the States, I'd say.
It has, in fact. And of course, another black eye a bit for cycling, but a great opportunity for his Cannondale Garmin teammate and a fellow American, one Joe Dombrowski, who did quite well at the Tour of Utah.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, he's a strong talent.
I tell you what, he's a fantastic young cyclist, 24 years of age. And again, Danielson's loss with him being, the whole doping scandal. Dombrowski, 24 years of age, steps in, fills in that role, wins the Tour of Utah. Exciting time for the young man. And also, Cannondale Garmin, I just got word, literally, right before we went on air, that one Avanti racing team rider from New Zealand, one Patrick Bevan, just heard fresh off the press from ACJ, Andrew Christie Johnson. He has signed on with Cannondale Garmin.
Wow, that's great and big news. Hey, Frank's nodding his head. I think Frank knows a bit about him as well.
Yes, I do. Patrick Bevan raced in Ireland last year, and pretty much wore the yellow jersey from first day to about the third day. But what an exciting bike rider he's going to be.
Frank, was that at Arncos?
That was the Raz in Ireland.
Oh, the Ross, yes, that's what I've been saying. Yeah, absolutely. Well, he's such a strong rider. The great thing about Patty Bevan, and not to not just talk more about Dombrowski, but the great thing about Patrick Bevan, I had a chance to see him at the Tour of Korea. He can do anything, Frank. He can climb. He can sprint. He showed that quite well against Caleb Ewan, who has already proven himself a fine sprinter in the pro ranks. Patrick can do just about anything. He can time trial.
Yes,
look. A great rider, a great talent.
Yes, we saw him. He's just gone from strength to strength. And in Australia right now, no one can touch the guy. He's unbelievable.
No, he's going to be good. And the great thing about it, he's signing a full-on contract, from what I understand. I think he received the contract today from what ACJ had told me. He's going to sign it. By the time this airs, he'll be Cannondale Garmin. And the good news is that ACJ gets to keep him for the rest of the season for Avanti. Because at the moment, I believe he is leading the Cycling Australia National Road Series at the moment. A series crown that was won by his Avanti teammate, Joe Cooper, the reigning New Zealand National Road Race Champion last year.
Yes, that's right.
Hey, just another thing, Aaron, while you're there. Obviously, the Race Across America was recently run, and I know that you know a fair bit about that race, and you were very close with the Belarus from Australia, who did really well. And by the way, great spread, great read you did for Cyclist Magazine on them. But obviously, the story, as strong and successful as it was, hasn't ended as well. And you can explain a little bit about that with the accident of one of their team members since she came back.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, we touched base on that story last week. There hasn't been a lot of development going on since then. Basically, Sarah Matthews, one quarter of the four-woman all-Australian team, all four, by the way, triathletes, who competed in the ultramarathon cycling event, the Race Across America, won the race. I think they did it in six days. They broke a 19-year record. They did it so fast. Amazing effort. But unfortunately, when they returned back to Australia, Sarah was on a training run because she was preparing for the Ironman 70.3 World Championships in Austria, along with one of her other teammates, Julianne Hazlett, and of course the other teammate, Natasha Horn, preparing for the ITU Sprint World Championship in Chicago. But while running across the Anzac Bridge, Sarah was hit from behind by a cyclist, and it caused her to fall and hit her head, and it did definitely a bit of damage, unfortunately, and it's left her in a medically induced coma over this past week. So it's actually, I think it's been almost 2 weeks now.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, we wish her.
I did get an update from Julianne Hazlett just last night, and she said that the medication is being reduced each day to slowly revive and bring Sarah back into consciousness. All signs seem to be positive, but they really just don't know yet as to what any short-term or long-term damage may be. So our thoughts right now are still with Sarah. We're still with her family in the Belarus, and we wish her the best.
Okay, well, yeah, like I said, we wish her well. We've got to be cautious about saying exactly what conditions she's in, because I guess these things change quite regularly and can happen quickly. Hey, just while you're there, I know you mentioned about the footy you're going to. What about, you know, for people who haven't been to where you are now? I mean, like you said, you've got this interview with Michael Ferrer we're going to listen to later on. He's in the French Quarter. I mean, I've got a feeling that you're the sort of guy who would gel pretty well into the nightlife there in the French Quarter.
Well, yes, Rupert, Frank, I am. I'm having a great time being back home. I am from Louisiana, and the great thing about Louisiana, what I like to tell people, is that it's one of the more unique states, and New Orleans being even more unique, in the fact that there have been 9 national flags that have flown over New Orleans, including, Frank, Portugal, along with Spain, Mexico, France, England, the Confederacy at one point. So you can imagine over the last 350 to 400 years, that is a lot of architecture. That's a lot of influences on food and music, culture, lifestyle, everything. So New Orleans has something. It's more of an international, it's more of a European-style city than probably any other city in the United States. And it's a special, special place, and I absolutely love it. There's always somewhere to go, somewhere to be, and at any given night, there are about 400 live music venues cranking at any one time here in the city. And there's always a Marsalis or a Neville. You can catch them playing live. It's just a phenomenal city. And it's hot. Right now, it's about 100 degrees today, which is about 41 degrees with a 91%, 90 to 100% humidity. So it's quite hot, quite muggy, quite sticky. So it's always best to find yourself in a nice, cool, dark place for the cold refreshment room.
Well, thanks for letting us. It's cold and brisk here in the winter morning in Sydney, but the sun's out. Hey, Aaron, we'll probably better let you get to the football, but thanks for taking the call today. We'll touch base off, as always, for the next future episodes while you're travelling around there. I've seen some of your great photos on your Facebook as well there, keeping us in touch with where you're going. I don't think we're seeing all the photos.
Well, no, absolutely. Listen, and before you just run me off, a couple of things. I want to find out and get Frank's take while we've got him here, because what a special time to have him. Thanks for filling in for me, Frank. I can't believe you wait till I leave to invite him back to the shop to host the show. But listen, I hear disc brakes. Disc brakes have made their way into the Pro Peloton now here in August. Is this something, you've got one of the best bike shops in Australia, is this something that you see taking over as a trend?
Look, it's not yet for sure. A lot of people are still a little bit funny about the disc brakes, and the UCI regulation's still not out yet, so I think people are waiting for that to happen.
Thanks for the love regarding my Jay McCarthy piece as well, who, by the way, signed a contract extension for Takeoff Saxo.
Yeah, good news, wasn't it? He heard that one, didn't he?
Oh, he did. What a great young man. And tell you what, for the listeners out there, if you don't know who Jay McCarthy is, shame on you if you're a cycling fan, because you should. This guy could be the next best.
Yeah, now speaking of this best thing, I know you've got to get to the football now. Behave well, no streaking at halftime, and be a good boy out there.
Hey, thanks so much, guys.
Take care.
Goodbye.
All the best.
Gone back home, T90, to the land of the beautiful queen. Gone back home to my baby, going back to New Orleans. On the step, here come the Neville brothers.
Sing that neck, my brother.
Going back home, T90, but never more will I roam. Gonna get my fill of that 8-2-8, cause New Orleans is my home. Is that a jumbo truck? No, that's Big Al coming to put a hood on you. Fish, jambalaya, red beans, and fine broccolini. Get some love and that gon' satisfy home in New Orleans.
I'm Rupert Guinness, and as you just heard, Aaron S. Lee is over in the United States. But with me today is Frank Conceso from Albion Cycles as our special guest. Frank, some interesting things that Aaron spoke about there, wasn't it?
Yes, it is very interesting.
He's an interesting guy.
He's a very interesting guy. Wonder what he's doing now with the football.
Yes, I don't want to think about it right now. Hey, another person who's an interesting guy is Matt White, who you know very, very well. Oh, he's almost a neighbour, really, when he's back here in Australia, the head sports director of Orica Green Edge. He's really sort of established his name as one of the leading sports directors, hasn't he, in cycling?
Well, you know, known Matt White for a lot of years, and Matt is a you know, extraordinary guy, a good communicator, and a good person, and he's doing such a great job. And you can see the differences when he's not there to when he is there. Mm-hmm. He can change the riders from a low point to a high point very quickly. And he is a, you know, he is a neighbour down the road as well, so I see him quite often.
You know, it's interesting that sometimes some of the best, say, sports directors or even coaches in different sports, they're not always the former stars. They're guys who are, like, in Matt White's role in his sports cycling, he was a domestique. But sometimes you see a footballer who's, who might have been the reserve player, but they may only have played for their country or their state or club a couple of times. But when they get that coaching opportunity, they really know how to communicate well with the with their athletes, and they know how to bring the best out of them, and then also how to handle the superstar marquee names in the team.
Well, you do. Look, you just have a look at other sports, like in football, Jose Mourinho, for example. He was never a great footballer, but he's a great coach. Mm-hmm. We say that Matt was a domestique, but I think Matt was better than that. He showed that in when he was a young guy in the national team. He showed when he was a professional, and now as a director, he's just got the goods that it takes.
Frank, you've been on the national team years back as a mechanic.
Yes.
As listeners out there, there's a lot about Frank, that Frank's done a lot of different things. We'll only touch a few of them probably in the show. But, you know, when you were on the national team and you said you knew Matt White, then what was he like as a young rider and you were having to work closely with him as a mechanic?
Look, you know, you're very close to these guys as a mechanic or as a part of the team. You eat with them, you sleep with them, not literally, but you spend a lot of time with these guys. And Matt was, he's like a friend, you know. Mechanics have bad days as well, and they're always out there, the same as Darren Smith was. You know, Ricey and all those guys were there then. Matt was a very special guy in those days, and he still is, obviously.
An interesting part of the Matt White story is also how, you know, his wife, Jane Saville.
Oh, what a great person she is, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And having the kids now, I mean, great kids, and I think there'll be a couple of champions out of those children.
For those who don't know, Jane was a champion walker.
That's right.
And there's still that memory of the Sydney Olympics, her coming into the stadium and she got the second red card.
And got disqualified. Unbelievable.
But how well she took it. I mean, it sort of reflects the humility of Matt and Jane together. You know, they're elite athletes. They were elite athletes, but to be able to take that and still move on with their lives, a lot of other people would have just crueled them.
I think there's a lot to learn from that. I see Jane quite often. She pops in the shop with the kids and all that. And she's just both people are very special people.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them great stars of the past.
Well, for those who, you know, are wondering a bit more about Matt White, in our last episode we had an interview with him, the first of a two-part series, which was, you know, wrapping up the Tour de France and how Orica Greenedge went or didn't go in the Tour. Well, we've got the second part of that interview now, Frank, where Matt will talk about the team from now. Starting off with talking about Caleb Ewan, how he's tracking and what he hopes to do. He talks about the possibility of him doing the Vuelta this year, and also how the team's tracking with a view to the World Championships, Michael Matthews and Simon Gerrans, if he can stay on his bike this time.
That's right.
And also, how the team is sort of evolving into a different sort of team where they want to get riders to go for the general classification. Do you think they're heading in the right way, Frank?
I think so. Look, it's like any team. You know, they've gone very well for a few years and won a lot of stages. And there's a downer somewhere. You know, you're always not going to be up there. And obviously there's critics out there about the teams. But I think they're rebuilding now. And if they can stay on their bikes, I think the chance of having someone right up there on the tours is a very good possibility.
How about we just have a listen to see what Matt White has to say?
Sure.
Well, just a few days after the Tour de France, we spoke to Matt White, the head sports director of Orica Greenedge, on What a Ride, about the fallout from the Tour, literally, but also metaphorically, because it was a pretty dramatic race. The Orica Greenedge team, though, has still been continuing on in its ways in a pretty positive way. Soon after the Tour de France began, the Tour of Poland got underway. And it wasn't long till we saw Caleb Ewan of Orica Green Edge, right amongst the fray there. He got a second place behind Marcel Kittel. On stage two, he had an unfortunate crash, but certainly Caleb's shown that he's right up amongst there with the top-line sprinters in the world based on previous form this year. So, Matt White, what is your take about how Caleb sort of got back onto the swing of things at the Tour of Poland?
Yeah, look, I think it's been a positive start. After his last race in Tour of Korea in June, where he wrapped up a couple of stages and the overall, he had a little bit of a spell. And we spoke about the second part of the season. Well, the first part of the season was all about bringing confidence with Caleb. Sprinting successfully involves a lot of confidence and trusting your teammates. And that was the goal at the start of the season. You know, to rack up 10 wins by June was pretty impressive. But the second part of the season was to put him in a little bit deeper into the throwing up against some of the best sprinters in the world. And he's got off to a great start in Tour of Poland with, like you said, a second place to Marcel Kittel, first stage. He's involved in an unfortunate touchdown yesterday. But he's okay. He's bounced out of that pretty good. And he's going to be lining up in another couple of stages, sprint opportunities in Tour of Poland. And he's been told if he wins a stage in Tour of Poland, he will be going to the Tour of Spain. Otherwise, we've got a very good program mapped out for him for the second part of the season regardless.
It's a pretty impressive year besides the wins he's got. He did finish, he's got a second place to Mark Cavendish, he's got a second place to Alexander Kristoff, and now to Marcel Kittel, albeit without the Tour of Poland being finished yet. You know what those top-line sprinters think and how they do look at their rivals. What's your vibe about how the Cavendish, Kristoffs and Kittels, how they regard Caleb now?
Yeah, look, I think they know that he's got the talent. They haven't come across a sprinter this young for a while. He's hungry. I just spoke with Caleb overnight after his crash here in Poland. And I suppose the most thing he's upset about is not actually crashing, it's that not winning. And that's the sort of mindset that you like to see in a sprinter. Yeah, that die-hard attitude, because at the end of the day, those guys, you know, he's crashed yesterday at 60 kilometres an hour, and he's got to line up 24 hours time and do it again, and you've got to have that attitude as a sprinter, and we've got a special one on our hands with Caleb, his season's been progressing very, very well, but he's definitely a rider for the future, and we're trying to put a team around him that's going to grow over the next couple of years, and look, we're going to have an exciting announcement within a week or two about some more backup to help Caleb and his goals for the future.
Well, look, you did mention about how if he does win a stage in the Tour of Poland, he'll get a gig at the Vuelta a España, the third of the three Grand Tours. If he doesn't go, or if he still goes, I do know you have another handy young Scandinavian sprinter on your roster already. Will he be going either way?
We won't see. What we're going to do with Magnus Cort, he's going to be targeting the one-day races in preparation for the World Championships as well. And if we do want to go with Caleb, Caleb will only be going for the first 8 to 9 days. A three-week tour at 20 years of age is too much. So the plan would be show him one of the biggest stages the world is like. He's probably only going to get two chances in that 8 to 9 days. But if Caleb doesn't go to the Vuelta, he's going to end up riding in Hamburg or Alberta or Poitiers. He's got a busy program, and he's already had a busy year already. So he's going to get his good chances, and he's certainly not finished with his win count this year for the rest of the year.
Now, you did mention that Orica Greenwich will be naming an exciting prospect to help Caleb in the next days. But my understanding is you already do have a new recruit from Tinkoff Saxo, who was riding in the Tour de France, who's quite a character.
We do. We've got Kristoff Jill Jensen. He's a Danish boy, but he's actually got an Irish mother, so he speaks with an Irish accent. And he has actually been a big part of Alberto Contador's season so far with him, and also Peter Sagan in the Flemish Classics with Tirreno Jatica, and part of Contador's winning Giro team. He's 25 years of age, and he's a very versatile character. He won the Danish Time Trial Championships in June, and I'm really looking forward to having him on board. He's going to fit in straight away into our team, so we can see that. And a very versatile guy. But, I think he's got a lot of improvement to go at 25, But look, we've been gradually building a GC team over the last couple of years, and to have a rider who's been part of Alberto Contador's winning Giro team, and it's a big bonus, because that sort of experience, it's hard to come by, and at 25 years of age, to handle the pressure of being part of a winning Giro team is. It fits very well with me.
Yeah, because that's pretty interesting, because a lot of people don't realise when you're thinking ahead for the future, you know, most people think of the stars you want to recruit and all that sort of stuff, but certainly you've got to think of those nuts and bolts people, and when you've got someone as young, and as I did say, he does sound to be a guy who obviously a great rider, very strong rider, but he does bring his own personality to a team which at tense moments can help a team to relax, I'd say, over at the dinner table.
Definitely. And look, we put a lot of effort into our recruitment, and especially with the foreigners, because look, at the end of the day, the Aussies, we know all the Aussies, and it's a small cycling community. But whereas the foreigners, look, our team's not for everyone, just like French team's not for everyone, or Italian team's not for everyone. So you've got to choose the right personality. One thing is about people's physical abilities and what they do on the bike, but it's also whether that person's going to gel in the culture of the team, and Christoph is going to gel very, very quickly.
Now, you talk about the mixed lollies in the Orica Green Edge lolly jar there. We've got a very exciting guy in Esteban Chavez from Colombia who's already impressed you guys since he's ridden with you, but this year he's going to try and go for the GC. I understand the overall classification in the Vuelta. Is that still on the cards?
It is still on the cards. Look, I think over the last couple of days we've seen the announcement of the confirmation of Quintana for the Vuelta, of Nibali for the Vuelta, and obviously Rodriguez was targeting already, and same as Alberto. So look, the cream of the cream of the Tour de France are going to be at the Vuelta this year. So look, it's going to be a great challenge for him. We're realistically, he attempted in his first year comeback after injury to ride a general classification, and that went well for 2 out of 3 weeks. And I think a year on with the Giro and obviously Tour of Switzerland and a busy first part of the season program in his legs, I think it's a realistic goal that we can try to target a top 10 place. Whether that's going to happen this year or not, we'll find out. But the team's going to be supporting Esteban 100%. And since Tour of Switzerland, he's back in Colombia. He lives at 3,500 metres above sea level, so he's had a free altitude camp at home for the last 6 weeks, and he'll be coming back about 10 days before the Vuelta, and he's in good shape, good morale, and really looking forward to having a second go at that Tour of Spain.
And it's been a credit to you guys that you still contracted him, because I know about his story with the accident from his crash and the situation that he was in with his arm. I mean, maybe you can just sort of let our audience know briefly about that situation, because, Orica Green has certainly put a lot of faith in him, but I understand he's certainly repaying it pretty well.
Yeah, so the 13 months before we signed him, he actually won Tour de l'Avenir, which for people who don't know, that Tour de l'Avenir is basically the Tour de France for under 25s. Now, these days, it's contested by national teams, and it's a very, very good indication of the level of under 25s who aren't already professional in the elite division. And Esteban won general classification there a couple of years ago. And the next year in February, the first series of races he did in the year, he had a very bad crash, and he did some nerve damage, which affected his right arm. And after a few months, it wasn't getting any better. And so he had to make some pretty drastic surgeries that to connect nerves from other parts of his back. And basically, that operation was going to decide his career. Now, if those nerves didn't reconnect, you put it this way, he couldn't shake your hand properly. He couldn't raise his arm above his shoulder when we actually signed him. So we had clauses in there, obviously, with medical staff at a certain time in the year that we weren't happy with his development. But we were the only team who actually took a punt on him, because he was obviously off the radar for the whole season. But we met him, we've spoken to him, we did a bit of background search into him. Obviously, Lightning is a great indication of his level at the under-23 level, but he's a very mature young man. And look, even when he came to the team, when we first met him, he didn't speak English. He speaks very, very good English at the moment. And he's he's a very, very dedicated athlete, and he's worked very, very hard to come back from a career-threatening accident to be at the level where he was at last year, his first year back, and this year looking at bigger and better things.
Well, that's a pretty amazing story. When you hear of the cutthroat nature of professional sport, it's a message out there that, you know, people who put in will get back in return, both as an athlete and as a team, I hope, too. You know, so I think it's a credit to all parties that you guys have been able to pull that off. And it's going to be really exciting, I think, for Aussie fans to sort of get used to the name Esteban Chavez.
Yeah, look, it's... And look, anyone who knows him or seen any interviews with him is a pretty bubbly little character. And it's a combination. I'm pretty excited about next year. I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But you know, with the Yates brothers and Esteban going into the Tour de France with three genuine climbers, whether we're going for general classification or not next year, we're certainly going to have three world-class climbers for next year's Tour de France. And all under the age of 24 or 25, you know, it's exciting for us. It's taken a couple of years to happen, but it's been a good evolution, and how far that evolution is going to go in the next 12 months, only time will tell, but it's certainly exciting for us.
Well, Matt, that sounds like a ride worth going on, if you ask me, and hopefully we'll be saying very soon, what a ride. But thanks for joining us as always on the show, mate, and Matt, we'll touch base soon to see how the progress of Orica Green Edge is going along.
Certainly, mate. Like we've got a lot of goals still to come with the Vuelta and the Canadian races, and obviously finish off with the Tour of Lombardy. Still got a lot of racing to go, and very motivated guys to get some more results for the team.
Okay, good on you, Matt. Thanks very much, and well done.
Thanks, sir.
Hey.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an aeroplane. And Lenny Bruce is not afraid. Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Locking in, uniform and book burning, blood letting, every motive escalate, automotive centering. Light a candle, light a motor, step down, watch your heel crush, crush. Uh-oh, this means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, you symbiotic, patriotic, slam, button, tap, right?
It's the end of the world as we know it.
It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
Say So from Albion Cycles in sunny Bronte in sunny Sydney on a cold winter's morning. Frank, that was interesting what Whitey had to say, but what we're going to talk about now is a bit of triathlon, a change of pace. Obviously, different sort of mindset, a different lifestyle than cycling. You know, we're going to soon talk to Phil Rockner from firstoffthebike.com, but before we put that call into Phil, you've got a lot of experience in triathlon yourself. You've coached triathletes. They're a different breed of athlete, aren't they?
They are definitely a different breed.
Don't be fair now.
Different breed of people. I wouldn't say they're a lot harder. They'd be, you know, like a tour athlete. They're very, very strong people, very strong will to be able to do three sports. So, you know, totally different sports altogether and different set of mind, you know.
What's the biggest challenge in your coaching capacity? What's the biggest challenge of coaching triathletes as opposed to coaching cyclists?
Look, I think the biggest thing is trying to put three sports together, which is very difficult for anyone to achieve, and that's why that you know, to get your athletes up there, it's not an easy task for any coach, to be honest.
Has there been any triathlete or a couple of triathletes that really sort of stood out for you as athletes that you've actually thought, well, you know, you really admire them for what they've achieved or trying to achieve?
Well, yes, I mean, there's two people that I had been involved with. One was Carla Moreno from Brazil, and to be able to train so hard in Brazil and to achieve what she achieved to go to the Olympics in 2000 was absolutely amazing, since that where they trained is, you know, Brazil is not an easy place to train, and she managed to get to the Olympics. And the other guy was Craig Walton, you know, the best swimmer in triathlon at that time and the best cyclist, and, you know, also great people, and to achieve what they have is amazing.
Now tell me, you own a bike shop. Who are your best clients, triathletes or cyclists? What type of person invests more money? Or maybe it's not the amount of money, maybe it's the amount of bikes they buy, or whatever. I mean, what's the balance of your clientele?
Well, that's a hard, it's an easy and a hard thing to say. A lot of people spend a lot of money. I think this day and age, it's not so much the triathlete. Obviously, the triathlete does more sports, they do a lot more on bike. But I think, to be totally honest, it's the older guys now that are coming into the sport that are spending a lot of money on bikes and doing a lot of training. I find that more of the new thing, more than triathlete versus a bike rider.
We're talking about the mammals there, aren't we?
We are at that.
Hear me. Okay, well, look, how about we put a call into Phil Rockner from firstoffthebike.com, and let's get an update to see what's doing in triathlon. Phil, welcome back to the show, mate. How you doing, and how's this world of triathlon been going since we spoke to you last week?
Thanks for having me back. I must be doing something right. I've got back on your wheel, Rupert. Very happy with that. Look, it's another big week in triathlon. This time of the year is exciting. It's a great time to be involved in the sport because we have what we like to call as the world title time, and we'll be deciding three world titles within 6 weeks, starting ITU, then 70.3, and then on to the big dance in Hawaii.
Yeah, I mean that is exciting, mate, and I guess for the sport and the coverage of the sport, it keeps you very busy, doesn't it? I mean, how do you find how does the mainstream media sort of pick up the sport these days with covering it? How do you find that they're handling it?
They don't at the moment, okay. In Australia at least, they're dominated by Bulk Sport. sports. You know, the EPL's just started in England. You've got September 11, the start of the NFL season, which means college football's going to be starting as well in America. So, you know, triathlon is niche. There's no doubt. We know that. Everybody's across that. The fact that it has an Olympic status helps it. But in mainstream media, it helps once every 4 years, to be honest with you, Rupert. I work on a couple of other commercial outlets, and getting a triathlon story across to them is really, you've got to pitch it.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, you know, we were talking before, just before we went on air, about the about professional athletes, and, you know, whether there's a qualifying, well, there is a qualifying system to get a professional license, but whether the depth of professionalism is strong enough to actually sustain it as a profession. I mean, what's your view on that? And I mean, is it hard, or is it too easy to get a license?
Well, it's there's a couple of things that have been circulating the triathlon world this week, and we've been covering one of those. We wrote a piece about it with one of our professionals, Maddie White, who from South Australia, who wrote, it is too easy to become a pro. And more importantly, Ruth, it's important that people understand that once you get your pro license, it's almost impossible to lose it. Not when you have performance issues in other sports, or you have injury, you lose your ranking, you slide down the rankings in tennis, for example, or golf or surfing. You know, you have to hold on to your ranking. In triathlon, there's no ranking. There's not really a ranking system. If you want to race Kona, you try and get your KPR points up, etc. But the Federation, Triathlon Australia, for example, will rubber stamp your pro card every year. And there's something wrong with that. There's something really, really wrong with that.
Yeah, so like I could become a pro if I wanted to, could I?
You and I could probably make a run at it. But to tell you how lax they are, the Federation's guys, is that Jason Shortus, who retired last year, mm-hmm. got his pro card stamped again this year. So where's the checks and bounds? Where's somebody saying, okay, here's our list of professionals, and what's happening with that? You know, it's like, you know, in any sport, you have ups and downs. When you have good years and you have bad years, you know, you've got to deal with that. In triathlon, you can do whatever you like, essentially, and still remain a professional in the sport. You know, I think it's laughable, and I think the sport's going to suffer because it has this stigma of amateurism attached to it. And while that's being allowed to happen, if you don't maintain a minimum standard, and while we laugh about becoming pros, what it does for the sport is it doesn't give it an element of professionalism, which it desperately needs.
Yeah, that's true. Like, Frank, I mean, you've seen both sports evolve. I mean, how do you, when you see the professional cyclist and you see the professional triathlete, what's your feel about that?
Oh, look, I think there is a problem, as Lee says, you know, like, in both federations there's problems, you know, and as he says, you know, it's got to be fixed somehow or other. I think cycling's a little bit different. You can't just go out there and get a pro license. Well, you can. This day, actually, you can, because as soon as you become a continental team, you have a pro license. Mm-hmm. So it's too easy to become a pro, as Lee says.
Yeah, yeah. Phil.
Sorry, Phil. Sorry, I was talking about Lee.
That's all right, Fred. Sorry, Frank.
Hey, you know, guys, the issue is, and this is the triathlon's key issue, is this is when, you know, when you're talking about the difference between cycling and triathlon, there's one critical difference, and this is what's holding back the sport of triathlon, is that there is not one single governing body. The UCI runs everything that's on two wheels, and that, like it or love it, there is that standard in place, and it's coming out of one body. Whereas in triathlon, there's not one governing body. In Ironman racing and in 70.3 racing and in non-drafting Olympic distance racing, there is no regulation. The only regulation there is in the ITU sphere, where they've got the Olympic Games. And outside of that, there is no one who's actually doing the administering of this. And this is what's killing the sport, is there's not some centralised body saying, hang on, minimum standard for this, maximum standard for that, these are the rankings, this is the rules, there is nothing. So as a pro, guys, you can show up to a race, and you can have one set of drafting rules, one set of passing rules. The week later, show up to another race with a different set of rules. That alone says to me something's broken.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. You've got to have consistency, haven't you? And then it ends up, you know, creating different sort of athletes too, don't they? I mean, you could be an athlete that suits one sort of rules, and then you may not suit the other. And then you try to market that and promote it and sell it as a brand. It's pretty hard.
On the head too. There are races that have a 7 metre drafting rule. Now, anybody knows anything about drafting, if you're within 7 metres, you may as well be
Hey, you're talking about the three world titles that are coming up now. Which of the three is your favourite one, Phil, that you sort of get pumped up most for?
Kona is it, mate. The ITU stuff is, I don't like the ITU racing. I've gone on record of saying this, so I'm not going to offend anybody. What I don't like about the ITU is that they do a cumulative race. So you build points over the course of the year, and then basically the grand final, you already know there's probably three people in contention to win it. You know, the one thing I love about the World Road Championships is that you have no idea who can win on the day.
That's true.
It's exciting. You know, and in triathlon, we used to have that. And that's how guys like Peter Robinson won three world titles. His last one in Gamagori, when he basically had 12 days' notice to get ready for this race, he showed up and won. It's just remarkable. You don't get those stories anymore because they're basically already predetermined. There's three guys with enough points to actually win the race. Or, you know, in this case, Gwen Jorgensen's going to walk away with the women's event. But in Kona, it's Kona. You know this. It's you know, we call it the dog years race. Everything's amplified by seven. Seven times the media, seven times the pressure, seven times the talk, seven times the intent.
Yep.
Everybody gets so excited for that one day when the best in the world face each other on the lava, and there's no excuses, there's no BS, there is just absolute, I guess, grit to see what they can do against Madame Palais, who runs the heat, and also what they can do against each other. It's fantastic.
Yeah. I went back to Kona last year just for a holiday, just to sort of check it out, and it's a completely different place when there's no Ironman there. I mean, it's actually interesting to go and see the place when it's just quiet, when Kona is just a Kona without the Ironman. But you still, when you stand on the beach there and you swim out there on the course, it still comes back to you all the memories of the place and of the Ironman.
Well, you know what's cool about it is that you know, when you do go there race week's a really intense place. But when you do go there, the cool thing is that you are, you know, you can go out and swim next to, you know, the world's best. I can go for a swim with Sebastian Kidna. He can be out on the swim course, or Luke McKenzie, or, you know, there's a coffee boat they have out there, and you can swim out to the coffee boat, grab a shot of coffee and swim back. You can believe that. It's a very good social place for a journo, you know, like the Tour de France. You go there and you catch up with the same people you see each year. The other side of it is just the speculation leading into it is so much fun because you basically have no idea what anybody can produce on the day, and you spend months trying to figure it out, and then in the week preceding, you shut your eyes and throw darts.
Yeah. All right, Phil. Well, look, we'll leave it there. But look, mate, thanks very much for talking to us again on What a Ride. And of course, for all the news we can and views, and your views are very highly regarded and always interesting. Go to firstoffthebike.com.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Okay. Take care, mate. Thanks, Phil.
Moving forwards, using all my breath. Making love to you was never second best. I saw the world crashing all around your face. Never really knowing it was always mesh and lace. Lives, the kind which never hates. Trapped in a state of imaginary grace. I made a pilgrimage to save this human race. Never comprehending the race I'd long gone by. Better all the time. There's nothing you and I won't do. I'll stop the world and make.
say so, from Albion Cycles in Bronte, in Sydney. Frank, we're just having a chat with Phil Rockner from firstoffthebike.com. I loved it when he started talking about Kona and the Ironman there. It got my hairs in the back, what hairs I have left on the back of my neck.
Yeah, you seemed very exciting then, didn't you?
Yeah.
Back to training groups.
Yeah, I started talking about the swimming there and my mind wandered off and I drifted off and then forgot what we're here for.
It was quite interesting what he said about the coffee shop
in Kona.
So you swim out and then you have a coffee and swim back.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
That's a good idea,
isn't
it?
What you'd be doing.
That's what I wouldn't mind, little Rose. And then I'd probably get a boat back.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a beautiful place. I'd have to say that swim, Kona, is probably one of the best swims anywhere. Like for going for an open ocean water swim, it's beautiful. The water's warm enough. It's not too hot though, but it's so clear and it's just very safe. And it's just a great place to swim.
Yeah, it sounds like a beautiful place, and you came back all regenerated when you came back after your holiday.
Yeah.
And all very keen to get going again.
Yeah, I haven't really got far since then, but I'll have to get keen again to get going again.
I'm sure that you will.
And now, you've been to the States a fair bit in your time. I mean, Trek bicycles are the ones that the brand that you sell here at Albion Cycles. I mean, you've been over there for races a fair bit, haven't you?
Yeah, I was there many years ago for the Tour de Pontland there, three times with the Heiko Salzwitter. Mm-hmm. I was quite fortunate to be with such a great coach, world coach, as him. As you know, he's now with Sky and the English for the Olympic Games, for the Team Stomtrol. And it was very interesting times.
Yeah, what's the mentality of racing in the States? What's that like, you know, compared to, say, Europe or even Australia? Is it a different mentality?
Yeah, I think so. I think Americans are very positive in what they do. It's like the old racing where, you know, the amateurs go off at 100 mile an hour and they last 100 Ks. And the pros obviously start racing at 100, you know. Mm. But it's different style of racing altogether in America.
Yeah, and obviously they've got a lot of races on at the moment. We've just heard Aaron talking about Dabrowski, who won the Tour of Utah. They'll have later on Tour of Alberta, the US Pro Cycling Challenge, which in Colorado. I remember it used to be like the Coors Classic. I used to go to the Coors Classic,
which then took over for the
Tour
de Pont. That's
I mean, there was always a great feel going over there, and it is different following those races and going to the European ones, but it's got its own personality, the scene there.
Great organisation in America, you know, pretty much like Europe. Every race you go to in Europe is a great organisation. I think the Americans have learnt a lot from the European racing.
Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking to Aaron earlier in the show, Aaron Lee, who's over in the States right now, and probably right now he's probably getting into quarter time of the football game. Hopefully he's behaved himself. Now, he told us how he was did an interview, though, with Michael Farren, who's the owner of a bike store called Bicycle Bicycles, and it's in the French Quarter of New Orleans. And it was just recently named as the 12th best shop in the US. Now, in Australia, where does Albion Cycles sit?
That's a very interesting question. I wish you wouldn't ask me that. In Australia, we have so many good shops. It's hard to put a finger on any shop and say we're running 10th or 12th. I think we're probably running in the first 30. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that we are. There is a lot of good bike shops in this country. And in New South Wales, you know, Clarence Street, Woolies Wheels, there's a lot, you know. We're just very fortunate to have a great brand like Trek, though, you know. That's probably puts it up there in the top 30.
Yeah. Is the industry going strongly, Frank, the retail industry, or is it, I mean, I assume it's always hard. Every business is hard these days.
Oh, look, you know, if we have a great winter, it's better. If we have a very cold winter, people just don't go out, so therefore it's a little bit slower. Mm-hmm. But things are changing big time around the world in cycling. More stores are becoming concept stores, mm-hmm. Where the owner decides to have one brand only. And that's working very, very well in Australia right now. More so because of the internet, the way that things have gone on the internet. And we don't have to worry about the internet because we've got a great brand. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, 5-6 brands out there that are doing this. And therefore, you will be successful if you're one of these brands.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Well, look, how about we have a listen to Aaron's interview anyway with Michael Farrand, and it'd be interesting to see what you think about what he said. You know, you're half a world away, but at the end of the day, you're just trying to do the same thing. And from what I understand, what Michael's been trying to do, he's also trying to blend into the social environment around him. He's in the French Quarter of New Orleans. We're in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, beach area. But it is important, isn't it, for a shop to sort of be a part of the community, not just be there just to sell and make money. You know, contribute.
It's one of the most important parts. You've got to be involved in racing, involved in, you know, in triathlons. Be, you know, you've got to adapt to everything that's around you. Otherwise, you don't survive.
Mm, yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to hear. Anyway, let's have a listen to see what Michael says about his environment with his shop in the French Quarter of New Orleans.
Okay.
Well, I'm right here on the streets of New Orleans, and I'm with Bicycle Michael himself, Michael Ferrand. Michael, welcome to What a Ride.
Thank you. How are you today?
Oh, fantastic. First and foremost, you got to talk to me. You've had a bike shop here in right outside the French Quarter for 32 years. It's an iconic location.
That it is. The city continues changing all the time.
Well, what was it like? Yeah, obviously, the city has changed quite a bit over the last, say, 10 years since Hurricane Katrina.
Well, in terms of the cycling, it's become more and more friendly. The advocates have been doing a better and better job of getting more bicycle lanes out there, which for the serious cyclist isn't necessarily all that we're interested in. I mean, I'm more of a share the road guy necessarily than having bike paths per se, but I think it's good when people are included, and if motorists understand that bicyclists are part of the road as well, that's a good thing.
Now, Michael, you guys have, obviously we mentioned 32 years you've been here in New Orleans, the last three of which your shop has been ranked quite high across the country as one of the best bike shops in the world. Just last week voted number 12. How does that make you feel as a bike store owner?
It's always nice to be recognized for what you do.
What makes your bike shop special?
Well, we are special, that's for sure. We're unique in that we're not just a road shop or a mountain bike shop or a commuter shop. We have a pretty wide area of interest. I guess our specialty comes from our wrenching to start with. Once you're, you know, if you can do, if you're a serious mechanic and are not afraid of any bike, then I think it leads you to a lot more expertise in some of the other dark nook and crannies in the cycling world.
You would have had to have seen some crazy things over 32 years here. I mean, all the parades during Mardi Gras, Southern Decadence, the French Quarter Festival. Are there any memories that just stand out?
Just another day on the street.
But I've got to ask, because we were talking about being ranked so highly around the U.S. and being voted, so I ranked 12th this year. They were, I think you mentioned earlier before we were talking, about 10,000 bike shops, I believe, in the U.S. That number has dwindled quite a bit over the years.
When I started, I think it was closer to 20,000 bike shops in the U.S., and I think now we're down in the mid-4,000 range. So I think a lot of shops are going away, and obviously new ones are opening up, but not as many. And I think the trend is for a lot of shops to be bigger. And obviously there's a lot of, you know, specialty sporting goods are trying to play into the bike world, as well as manufacturers now are starting to look to go direct. So it's a challenging environment, but in my opinion, if you have expertise in repair and customer service, that's something that, you know, a mail order place can't deal with.
What is the biggest headache in having a business here? Not just a bike shop, but just any business.
Business is hard.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously, I mean, most businesses fail in the first year and in the first 3 years. And, you know, everyone thinks a bike shop is, everyone always comes in, customers thinking that, you know, they fix their bike mechanics. And I think it's easy to fix your bike. It's hard to fix all the bikes. Yeah. And that's what takes a lot of skill and knowledge.
And you guys have a massive workshop in the back, though. How many bikes would you guys churn out a week?
It depends on what's needed. I mean, we have three stands up front. Donnie has a stand in the back. And then, you know, if we were fully staffed and things were rocking, you know, we have a warehouse with three stands in it to build bikes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, we have really high quality people working on bikes, so I mean, they can
fix bikes well and quickly, and we also are unusual, I think, in that we stock such a wide breadth of product that, you know, we don't have to stop and order every, you know, every time someone needs a chain. We got chains and cassettes and, you know, spares.
And obviously, that takes a lot of overhead, doesn't it, to stock all that and keep it, you know, in store.
Huge.
Do you guys do any online business whatsoever to compete with some of the online?
We haven't. I mean, I think our biggest strength is the fact that we that we're here, you know. And you know, you buy online because you think of it as a commodity and it's a price only thing. But when that stuff that you bought from the online company doesn't fit, or you bought a part online and it's the wrong one, you know, you're gonna see how great your customer service is over there online, and.
Absolutely. You know, we mentioned, you know, the French, you know, French Quarter Festival, Southern Decadence, obviously Mardi Gras,
there's festivals every weekend here.
The Jazz Fest, which is world renowned. Now, you guys do a lot. We talked about the bike rentals earlier. You guys do a lot of bike rentals.
We do.
And did a lot this year as well.
You know, it's funny because, you know, a lot of people opened up operations that are rental only operations. And, you know, most of them, Their philosophy was to go to Walmart and buy some Huffy quality bikes and rent those out to people. Actually, even with all the people that opened up, they just ran out quickly, and then we had even more business.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we rented everything we had earlier.
Yeah, just sold out.
Earlier than ever. Oh, wow. With all the competition. So, I mean, you know, I think people may go to some other people, and eventually they end up coming back, because, I mean, we have great service, we have great bikes.
You know, it's one of those things where if you're a landscaper, you have the worst yard. If you're a doctor, sometimes you often have the worst health. As a bike shop owner, do you get out there? Do you have a chance to go ride as much as you'd like?
Who can ride as much as you like? You know? But I'm hopeful now. I've got two kids out of school now.
Yeah.
So maybe I can get some more riding in. That'd be nice.
And where do you like to go here? Like, I mean, obviously there's some, you can go out to Lake Pontchartrain. There's a great...
Well, there's some, you know, if you're doing road stuff, I mean, riding around town is nice. They also have a nice, you know, the levees have been fixed up. They're working on the river levee right now, but the lake levee, which leaves from Bucktown by the lakefront and goes past the airport, is in great shape. So that's a great roady place to ride. Similarly, once they have it fixed up, the river levee is very nice. On the North Shore, there's some rolling hills, which I like to ride on a lot, up towards Bogalusa and... closer to Mississippi, there's some very good riding. These days, I've been doing more mountain biking, or haven't been, but the last few years, I've been tending to do more mountain biking. And you go to places like Homachita National Forest in Clear Springs, and Baton Rouge has some good riding. And you know, throughout the state, you know, up by Shreveport, there's some nice trails that way. And Ruston, Louisiana, you know, and Texas. And, you know, and I usually do a year trip to Solly, North Carolina, every year. I mean, I've ridden all over the country. I love riding off-road.
But now, you told me earlier that you're actually planning a trip coming up, but it's not a bike trip.
I'm going scuba diving.
Nice.
I'm going to Truk and Palau in Micronesia.
Now, have you been before?
Haven't.
No. And what are you most looking forward to?
Well, the quality of the diving is supposed to be just off the charts. I mean, Truk is famous, of course, from the fact that in 1944, I think there was... an attack on Truk that was 15 times the size of Pearl Harbor. So it's kind of hallowed ground to the Japanese. There are a lot
of wrecks.
There's a lot of, you know, some of the best wreck diving in the world. There's Zeros down there. You know, there's tanks and motorcycles and so many planes and boats just on the bottom of the ocean. It's supposed to be amazing, amazing diving. And then Palau is also famous for wreck and just the quality of the... the fish is just supposed to be unbelievable.
You know, you talk about the quality of the tourism. We're probably in one of the most beautiful and iconic cities in all the world. It's not overrated, is it?
You know, it depends what you like. I mean, there are cities that are maybe prettier in some ways. I mean, New Orleans is pretty, and the swamps are pretty, but it's different than the mountains, which I love the mountains, and it's different than the seashore, which I also love the seashore. But New Orleans has its own special ambiance. And certainly, if you're a foodie, which I am, and you love great food, and you like to be able to walk to to great food and great music or cycle. I mean, it's very doable by bike. Anywhere in the city is accessible in 20 minutes.
Well, can you give us a locals insight, a quick locals guide on where are the best places, where are your favorite places to go in terms of a good drink or perhaps some good food and good music?
Well, great music.
And we're out, like, sitting right across the street from Spotted Cat, DBA, Snug Harbor.
Frenchman Street is some of the best music in town.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to be beat. The other, you know, certainly Oak Street is very nice. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of places, but I mean, Frenchman Street, some, or Preservation Hall, yeah, are unbelievable. And as far as food, you know, you can't get bad food here. If you get bad food, you know, the places just wouldn't survive.
Yeah. Oh, what's your favorite dish?
Home cooking.
Yeah, just anything, right?
You know, I mean, there's so many fabulous places to eat here. You know, I like Brightson's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful place. Frank Brightson does a great, great job. And
I went to Port au Cale last night.
Yeah.
I always have to hit Port au Cale. Not Cajun fare at all, but what a great cheeseburger, baby potato.
Good hamburger and some good grog.
No, absolutely. I actually got the Huma Huma. I always get the Huma Huma.
Actually, there's often a line over there. So Snug Harbor has the same meat.
Yeah.
So you can get that same burger pretty much without the line.
And it'd be a lot quicker, right?
And catch world-class jazz music without moving.
And there's always, your bike store is right next to Snug Harbor, and it pretty much always has a Marsalis or a Neville or someone of that ilk playing.
When I first moved to New Orleans, we'd walk down the street, down Decatur Street, and they used to have a boat called the President, and the Nevilles would play there almost every night. And so you'd walk down the street and someone would say, here's some free tickets to see the Neville Brothers. And you're like, nah, I saw them last night, it's okay. And you'd walk another 15 or 20 feet and someone else would say, here's free tickets to see the Neville Brothers. I'm like, no thanks, never mind. And another 20 feet, someone, and you're like, fine, I'll go see the Neville Brothers again. It's amazing. Or Dr. John. I mean, it's just
what a problem to have.
It's a problem. You know, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Snug Harbor because it's one of the few places that's a sit-down kind of jazz club, which I like.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm a little older. Yeah. It's a little more upscale, but I just love it. And it was actually, when I first moved here, it was called the Faubourg.
Okay.
And back then, first night I was here, my host that I was staying with ended up playing there.
Really?
And so the second night I was in New Orleans, I went to a party at their house. And by the third night I was in New Orleans, because at their party, everyone who was anyone in the jazz music scene was there that night. By the third night, any time I'd walk into any jazz club in the city, I'd be on the guest list.
Oh, wow.
So I'd walk into Tipitina's, they'd be like, oh, you're on the list.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you go to the Tyler's Jazz Hall, oh, you're on the list.
Yeah.
So it was rough.
So you're a transplant.
Absolutely.
Where are you from?
I was born in New York City.
Yeah.
Lived in Paris for a few years as a child.
Mm.
Lived in Chicago for about six.
So is it when you were in France, you fell in love with cycling?
I loved cycling beforehand, but when I moved back and all my friends were riding Stingrays and I had a drop handlebar road bike, you know.
What was that first bike? Do you remember?
It was a Peugeot.
Yeah? Yeah, nice. Yeah.
In 1969.
Wow. How many speed?
I think that one was just a one-speed.
Was it?
Yeah. Single. One-speed, drop handlebar, road bike.
And there was no looking back?
No.
Yeah, you know, obviously, we're right here in the middle, you know, in the deep south of the U.S. This is football country. LSU Tigers, New Orleans Saints, which, by the way, has a preseason game tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Tonight.
Playing the Ravens.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll catch that at the R Bar.
Doesn't count for anything, but we'll still watch it.
No, absolutely. I mean, you follow the pro football?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, more professional than college, but
how are the Saints going to do this year?
I think it's a rebuilding year, but I think they'll do better than last year.
Yeah.
And you know, hopefully they'll go all the way. We'll see.
Fantastic.
Got to believe, right?
Always. Thank you.
Who dat?
Thanks, Eves Michael.
My pleasure.
I touch your lips and all at once the sparks go flying. Those devil lips that know so well the art of lying. And though I see the danger still, the flames grow higher. I know I must surrender to your kiss of fire. Just like a torch, you set the soul within me burning. I must go on along the road no returning. And though it binds me and it turns me into ashes, my whole world crashes, loud your kiss of fire. I can't resist you, what good is there trying? What good is there denying? You're all that I desire. Since first I kissed you, my heart was yours completely. If I'm a slave, then it's a slave I want to be. Don't pity me, don't pity me. Give me your lips, the lips you only let me borrow. Love me tonight, devil take tomorrow. I know that I must have your kiss, although it dooms me, though it consumes me, your kiss of fire. Can't resist you, what good is there in trying? What good is there denying? You're all that I desire. Since first I kiss you, my heart was yours completely. If I'm a slave, then it's a slave I want to be. Don't pity me, don't pity me. Give me your lips, the lips you only let me borrow. Love me tonight, let the devil take tomorrow. I know that I must have your kiss, although it dooms me, though it consumes me. The kiss of fire.
What a ride. I'm Rupert Guinness, and our special guest for this week, Frank Conceso from Albion Cycles. Frank, that was an interesting interview with Michael Ferrin from Bicycle Michaels in the French Quarter of New Orleans. It almost felt like I was there.
Yeah, it's interesting when you... it's quite interesting. I've never been to New Orleans, but I've just been... In my mind, I was trying to picture what was going on there. Mm. And I can just see the guy... he's probably French anyway. Or he would have to speak French being in that quarter, but... It'd be very interesting to know all the places where to go and, you know, what music's on tonight. And just imagine the riders coming in the morning and coffee all around. Just an amazing thing.
Now, one thing we did mention during What a Ride in this episode about you being Portuguese. Perhaps we didn't highlight it, but it just got dropped in there. Now, you are Portuguese, so you've got that Portuguese spirit, shall I say. How proud are you of Portugal? I'm not making fun of you in this moment, not yet.
No, of course not.
Portuguese jokes will come later.
Look, I'm 100% Portuguese, and I'm very proud of being Portuguese, but I'm also very proud of being an Australian. And I have children which are both Australians and grandchildren in Australia as well. Portugal is the nation that discovered the world, and for those that don't know, Portugal was first in Australia as well. The Dutch might have something to say about that, and Captain Cook, he might have something to say about that, but realistically, we were the first in Australia, and I am very proud.
There's a couple of other things Portugal's known for, isn't it? Like the Portuguese tarts, those little cakes?
Yes, and you know the other Portuguese, the Mateus José?
Yes.
And it's called Mateus José.
Mateus José,
that's right. Rosé. Which you've drank plenty of.
Rosé or Mateus?
Both.
Yes, I'd say so. But that's, and the country, Portugal's a beautiful country, isn't it? You've just been back there. It's great for cycling. They've got some good races there. Tour of Algarve. One of the top races, but is that an area that you think is sort of untouched as far as cyclotourism is concerned? Or
Well, I think both. I think that Portugal is untouched by not a lot of Australians go to Spain. They go to France. They go to Italy. If you ever touch Portugal, you'll be very surprised, and I think you'll go back again because it's such a beautiful country. Look, we were Spaniards before we were Portuguese, and I hate to admit that, but that's the history. But for cycling, it's a beautiful country, and let you into a little secret, I am trying to buy a place in the Algarve where cycling is the big. And the Tour of Algarve is a beautiful tour, and plenty of mountains in Portugal, obviously, but it is a beautiful country.
Oh, well, look. Can I get an invite when you get the house there?
Oh, you've got an invite already.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Hey, also, obviously, there's a lot of things coming up in the next couple of months from cycling triathlon. Phil Rockter told us about the Ironman. Have you had any Ironman entrants coming into the shop recently? You know, do you sense that sort of buzz getting close to Ironman time?
Yes, look, as Phil said, there's a lot of events right now. There's three world titles coming up. And we've already getting the people, obviously, in our Turbo Studio with Chris Hanrahan coaching those people. People coming in now to pack their bikes to go away, to get there earlier so they can get motivated and get the feel and the buzz of the triathlon. So that is happening right now.
Actually, one thing I would like to ask you, like in our last episode, we had a chat with Stephen Moore, the Wallabies captain, because obviously I report about rugby union as well. And, you know, now, over the years, we've often spoken about cycling, so I realised he had an interest in particularly the Tour de France. But obviously, in your capacity as a cycling coach, you know, we've had some footballers who've come in here. We've had Simon Poitevin, Warwick Waugh, two former Wallabies. I know we've had some rugby league players who've come and gone, I guess, as well, but you still see them around. When you see footballers come into the sport and you're trying to train them and coach them, what's the biggest challenge for you there?
Well, to be totally honest, with people like rugby league or rugby union or any player like that, it's easier to coach those people because they are so disciplined, mm-hmm. and they actually listen and they know that you're trying to teach them something which they don't know nothing about. Mm-hmm. And I found Simon Poitevin, which I was introduced to, and I know nothing about rugby union. And the guy, captain of Australia, you know, yeah. one of the biggest sports person in this country, and so easy to deal with. Warwick Waugh, the biggest man I've ever seen, stand next to the guy and you think you're in the land of giants.
Yeah.
Again, easy guy to coach. And I found them very interesting and very exciting to coach.
Yeah. Was there anything you learned about coaching cycling that you learned through their, I guess, experience of being elite athletes in other sports? I mean,
well, I just found that it's look, you learn a lot from everyone, and from Simon Poitevin, and that you can go. Simon Poitevin told me a story how he became such a great rugby union player,
yeah.
and it was very interesting. And what it means is that if you put your mind to it, you can become a great athlete. And I try to take those things on board. If I try really hard to coach someone and do the right things, I'll become a good coach as well. And that's what I've learned from these people.
We've seen also another person, Stephen Ainsworth, who's a champion sailor, yachtsman. He's he won the City de Hobart a few years ago on his now sold yacht, Loki. I remember when he first came along, and I knew who he was, but I mean, it's been interesting to see his development. But from yachting, I think how you see Stephen's commitment to cycling is all the detail, you know, like, you know, and you see him, he does love his detail, but he's a very good cyclist, isn't he?
Look, I knew nothing about Stephen Ainsworth, and then things that people tell me and questions that I ask him. He's a great sports person. Firstly, Sailor of the Year twice in a row, you know. I mean, that's an achievement in itself. But he, a little bit hard to coach because in a sense that the harder they go, the better they will do. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, in cycling, it's not like that. But I've been coaching Steve for some time now, and the achievements that he's had because he's put the hard work in himself, not because I didn't put the hard work into it, but just qualifying for the Veteran Worlds. He's been in Europe now cycling really hard over the mountains. He's come back really slow now to try to get that slowness into fast switching, you know.
Yep.
and he's such a great athlete at his age that it's incredible.
Well, look, Frank, it's been really enjoyable chatting with you today, and you know, hopefully you can come back on the show any time you'd like to. Please just let us know, but we'll get in touch with you for sure, because it's it's not just cycling, it's not just triathlon, it's not just swim, bike and run, it's just about how sport and it overflows, one sport overflows to another, and also into society, into what people are doing. You know, we've spoken about the local communities and the impact of cultural differences and all that sort of stuff, and with you being Portuguese Australian here in Bronte,
a long way from Portugal here,
you are a mixed bag. Anyway, Frank, look, thanks very much for being on What a Ride for this episode. I hope you've got a little bit out of it yourself. As for everybody out there, thanks for listening on What a Ride. You can catch What a Ride on the internet and also on iTunes, and Aaron S. Lee will be back from his US assignment in several weeks, but we will be staying in touch with him as he's travelling along the way in the US. Frank, once again, thanks for being on the show, and to all of you, take care and be safe.
Thank you, Rupert. Thanks for having me.
Just like heaven.